This is wildlife and schooling with my mom.
And if there's anything you don't want to answer, or I don't care, like anything, you just tell me, because it's censorship free. And also, this is your, let's say, product. So you have the same rights as me.
Okay.
Perfecto. Oh, we could do it in Spanish one day. Oh.
Yeah, no, I'm in. Yeah, of course. Yes.
Because I've seen there are so many homeschoolers here, and a lot of Mexican homeschoolers as well. I would love to have a Spanish version of this podcast one day. But anyway, it is what it is today in English. Dr. Fernando Morales, I'm so, so happy that you're here with me, because I'm a fan of what you're doing. You're combining my favorite topics, homeschooling and Bitcoin. And I think you are like, I don't know. I stumbled up across your profile at Noster, and I was like, dude, I'm already in love with this family. Please adopt me. Like, really awesome. So happy that you're here with me. Thank you for making time for this.
Oh, thank you for the invitation.
Really nice. So tell me a little bit more about yourself. How did you end up being what you are today? I mean, you have like at least 27 kids. No, how many kids do you have? You're homeschooling and you're a Bitcoiner and you do a great job as an... Yeah. No, I'm going to let you tell the people what you do.
Of course. So it actually happened really quick. I guess you could say up until the point where I graduated from med school, I was your typical fiat drone. You know, just my idea at that moment when I graduated was to do whatever a doctor does, to study for the specialty and whatnot. The only difference I wanted to do here was do my specialty in Germany, my medical specialty. Because it's a more humane condition, they actually pay you more decent and whatnot. So when I finished my med school in 2020, my wife is Latvian, forgot to mention that. So we met during an exchange back in 2016. We ended up getting together. And when I finished med school, she was already living with me. And we decided to go to Latvia. That's when the pandemic started. It's very important because my awakening was in part thanks to the pandemic. I think the pandemic opened a lot of people's eyes. But anyways, we went to Latvia. I was taking care of the children while my wife was turbo learning German. She's also a doctor, MD, and she's part of the European Union, Latvia. It's much more easier for her to go to work in Germany as a doctor than it was for me. And when we wanted to become independent financially. So that was the idea. So in that free time, because taking care of three children at that time, it's not that easy, small ones. I started having a bit more time for myself. I rekindled the passion for learning, because in med school, that died. Like when there were vacations, the last thing I wanted to do was pick up a book. But and then I started being curious again. And that's when I started. Well, first of all, I read this economics book called Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt. So that started getting me down the path of first of more free markets, libertarianism. But then I started going even further. I discovered anarchism, you know, anarcho-capitalism. And I started realizing, oh my God, the state is a huge problem in the best case scenario, right? And that's when I started questioning everything. And then obviously the pandemic was happening, the vaccines, Moderna, and all these things. And I started questioning that, because like the government was the governments around the world shut us all down. And then they're forcing vaccines on kids. And then, you know, as a parent, you start thinking like, what's the right thing for my children, right? So combining all of these doubting yourself and seeing the government's not doesn't really have your best interests at heart is when I realized, okay, what can I do to better my children's, not just their health, but like development? And obviously homeschooling came up. So the idea for homeschooling came up during the pandemic. They weren't going to school. They were too young for that still. And I remember talking to my wife about it, like maybe we should homeschool. And obviously the typical reaction, oh, what? That's crazy, you know? And in Latvia, you can kind of do that up until a certain age. I think only elementary school. I mean, you have to be reporting to the government, but after that, it's mandatory for them to go to school. So at that time, we were still planning to go to Germany. And in Germany, it's illegal to homeschool.
Oh, yes.
So that was like, that's when the problem started happening. Like, should we even begin? How should we do this? We don't even know where we're going to be in the next few months or year. So either way, I started trying it out myself in Latvia. But then we discovered, first of all, we saw Germany wasn't perhaps the best place to be long term.
Yes.
That's when, you know, because I was a socialist in the way I would think without knowing it, you know, like to me, like, yeah, tax the rich. Yes, of course, you should give welfare to everyone. It just, everyone says, and you just assume that's the right thing to do. But then, you know, going down this rabbit hole, I realized, nope. And then Germany is a socialist, basically, country, as hard as socialist can be. So long term, no, maybe doing the specialty, then going back to Mexico. In Mexico, you can actually earn pretty well as a doctor in the private sector. And in Germany, your salary is capped. You can go to a website and you can see how much you're going to earn year after year. So it's like kind of sad in a way if you want to do more. But then the Russian-Ukrainian war broke out, and Latvia, it's a border, you know, country with Belarus and Russia. So in a moment of, like, I guess you could say panic and like realizing there's nothing short term nor long term for us, like, let's go back to Mexico. So the war began around the 24th of February, 2022. By the 4th of March, 2022, we were already in Mexico. And we start from zero, from nothing, like, again. So then my wife's German that she had learned, she reached C1 German and medical German. She was doing the exam. She already had a hospital lined
up. Nice.
So we abandoned all that.
That's crazy.
And it was everyone thought we were crazy. And we were also thinking the same thing. What are we doing? But since I was the one who could work in Mexico, because, you know, the bad thing about being a doctor is that you can't really change countries and work as a doctor easily. There's so much bureaucratic nightmares and revalidation you have to do. So in Mexico, I began working. I was really going down the rabbit hole of homeschooling, Bitcoin, all that stuff. And then my wife she also had the pandemic had opened her eyes. She saw how terrible governments were, you know, and she realized she wants to homeschool. But she was nervous. I think, well, you should know, right, that when you first begin this, you don't know if you're doing it right. Like, what if your children turn out to be dumber than all the other children? So first we put them into a Montessori type school. And I remember we had like those, they invite you, the parents, over so you can see how the dynamics is, you know, and she would go there and see it. And she's like, I could do this myself.
Yeah.
So she started reading and seeing more or less what the Montessori programs are like. She reading books from Maria Montessori, the one who initiated the program. So we gave it a go. Like, after 2 years of being in Montessori, we took her children out and she just did it. So nice. My wife has been homeschooling since 2023 or beginning 2024. So she's been doing fantastically. She's happy with it, although she still doubts it from time to time. She doesn't know what's going on. But then her mom's a teacher, actually, in Latvia. So then she talks to her, and she says, she complains about how much more dumber children are getting in the public school system. So that makes her feel a lot better. And I've been ranting a lot, a lot, but to sum it all up, that's the gist of it. That's how we got into homeschooling. My role right now is I'm the provider of the family. I'm not like directly engaged every single day in teaching our children something, but I do love to throw in some economics in there because I love reading about Austrian economics. I love talking about Bitcoin. They know about it. We watch the Tuttle Twins. I don't know if you heard about that cartoon. Yeah. Yes, they love it. And I do my best as a father. I try to put them into activities and things that can help develop their like social skills and whatnot. So basically, I don't know if you're a homeschooler or an unschooler. I know there's some differences there.
Oh, yes. At this point, I mean, I'm a radical unschooler. I do nothing with my child in terms of trying to actively teach him something. We just live and this is what we do. But I do understand why people choose homeschooling, though.
Hey, dear unschooling friend, I'm very proud to present you my first partner, The Bitcoin Way. This is my go-to team for sovereign lifestyle solutions, and you already know the team from several episodes we did together for this podcast. They will guide you through mastering Bitcoin self-custody, securing your data with top-notch cybersecurity, and exploring Plan B residency for ultimate independence. This is what unschooling lifestyle is all about. So if you want to learn more about these freedom warriors, check out the link in the podcast description. See you.
The last couple of years, I was like, dude, how can anyone choose homeschooling? That is so sick. And now that I'm a little bit older and wiser, maybe I would say if I would have more kids, I would homeschool. Definitely. I just have one. Unschooling is the answer. And he's not the type for homeschooling, to be honest. So I never had this. And I'm a teacher. I'm German. I have all the requirements to be a perfect homeschooling mom. But I just can't do it. I hate teaching. My son hates to be taught anything. It's like to be taught anything. It's like he doesn't want that. So I gave up. And when he was five or something like that, in my German head, it was like, okay, he's five now. He needs to learn how to read. So I tried to teach him the alphabet, and it went south so quickly. It almost ruined our relationship somehow. So I was like, okay, I have to step back. I have to trust my gut. And my gut told me, like, just let him free. Like, dude, whatever. He's five. Let him play. And I didn't stop, to be honest. I let him play until today. And he's speaking Spanish, English, German. He's super smart. Nobody ever told me, like, wow, he comes across quite stupid. No, it's always the opposite. Like, wow, he's so smart. He's well educated. And I'm like, unschooling works perfectly fine for us in this case. But I think I would pull it off a little bit different if I had more kids, or if I would find a partner now and had more kids. I think I would organize it a little bit more, because if you just have one, you can just do whatever the fuck you like all day long, basically, you know. And my job is so flexible, that's easy. But now imagine myself, like, not working, raising kids, and this is my only job. Oh, I would do it differently.
Yeah.
Not because I regret it. That's not the issue. But I think, like, if there are more people involved in the family, like, oh, I like structuring it a bit more. So I see that the more kids you have, the more it makes sense to bring a little bit of structure in there. So what are your, like, you told me economics and these kind of things. Bitcoin is a topic in your household. So what do you think are the most important things you want to teach your kids, or your wife is teaching your kids, when it comes to homeschooling? Because I heard crazy stuff in my last conversation we had, like, what are your non-negotiables when it comes to what are you teaching your kids? My kid is learning survival strategies, meditation, and how to cope with dangerous animals. But that's it, basically. I have no other non-negotiables, but this is what he needs to do.
Survival stuff is something I've been wanting to implement myself, but haven't had the time to look into it. But obviously, as a doctor, my main non-negotiable is health. Like, I want them to be conscious of what it is to be a healthy human. Now, since they're children, they kind of have to do what I say, right? Or they have to eat what I buy. So they kind of have no choice there. Well, I'm not a dictator in that regard. If we go to a party or it's Halloween, I let them eat their candies, but we try to teach them low time preference. For example, my eldest, my daughter, she has a very low time preference. Like, she can get candy, she can get a gift, and she can be willing to postpone immediate gratification. Like, she can put it away and eat it a few days later, or save it for the movie. My second child, he's a boy. He's much more impulsive. He's 60, barely 6 years old. Like, you give him a candy and he eats it. Like, first of December, we gave him this box of chocolates, you know, because they had, like, one day he one chocolate. By day five, they were all gone.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. So I try to put I take advantage of those situations, and I try to explain, you know, low time preference right there, from the, you know, putting some economics in there and the importance of it. But going back to health, I tell them about the importance of eating food, like good food, in this case, carnivore, ketovore-ish type thing. And since they've been doing carnivore for keto, more like keto, for some time, they feel bad when they go too hard into the pasta or too hard into like junk food. They get nauseous, they throw up. So it can, and I immediately tell them like, this is why you're feeling like this. And I think that naturally helps them get the bigger idea, like picture like, okay, this thing makes me feel bad. Maybe I should be more careful. It doesn't stop them. Like they get over after a few weeks, like, okay, I'll just eat it more again. But my long-term goal is for them to just have the knowledge, like to know if I'm starting to get sick, to not feel good, I have the tools to get back on track. I'm also getting into quantum biology. So that's basically all this getting in the sun, avoiding blue lights. So like, for example, nighttime comes and Papa pops up his blue light blocking glasses and they see all these things. I think that's the most important thing. Like if I want them to become a better person, I think, or a great human being in society, I think I have to put the example first, right? So I try to do all these things. When it's too dark, I try not to have any screens on, but sometimes I have to because of work. Sunbathing. Baños de sol. So like in the morning, Papa goes outside without a shirt and they like to come out with me and relax, you know? So those are my non-negotiables. It's health and learning about basic economics. In my opinion, I think that's going to help them in the long term, because what's the point of wealth without health? And that's my motto, basically.
I love that. Let's talk about pasta, because I learned recently, just a year ago, and I'm 35, I thought I am quite intelligent and I put a lot of time into the thought of what am I eating? Am I eating healthy? I've been a vegan for at least 5 to 6 years, but it's long gone. And it didn't help me at all. It made my conditions worse and worse and worse. And I was thinking like, oh my God, I want to be like a friendly human being. I don't want to eat my friends. And oh, I love cows and these kind of shitty thoughts. Then we moved to the Canary Islands. And being vegan on the Canary Islands is impossible. You have to eat meat because this is what the people eat. It's a tiny island where we lived on, and you just eat what the locals eat. So I was like, eating meat. I was like, and then I got used to it. And I was like, dude, how could I ever stop eating meat? I love it. And the shitty part was I was still in love with pasta and bread because I'm a German. I love these kind of things. But not so much because my health conditions, they stayed the same. I felt I had more energy and these kind of things. But I, on the same time, had the feeling like, wow, nothing is really changing profoundly. It is just the superficial that I'm touching. And a couple of months ago, my son told me like, Mama, please don't buy pasta anymore. It's disgusting. No bread, no pasta. And I was like, dude, what the fuck? And yeah, he was like, no, he cannot accept it anymore. He is, I think he was 11 back then. And he just decided that like, this is not for him. And I should stop cooking this kind of shit. And I was like, dude, I'm happy to do so because I know keto is the way, because my good friend, she told me, dude, if you want to get rid of your skin issues, you need to eat keto all the way. And I tried it. And I'm not a person who's good in sticking to uncomfortable things for too long. But I did it. I was so proud. My skin was perfect. Now we moved again. And now I'm like eating garbage tacos every day. And that is what it is. But I love tacos. And I will eat as many as I need until I feel like I replenished my taco, I don't know, universe, you know. And then I will get back to keto. But what the fuck? Why is it so? I mean, I do understand why everyone is eating garbage and why it's like advertised like that, what we should eat and not be eating. But why is it so hard to switch to really good food? I mean, leaving out pasta was like punching in my face every damn time I saw a pasta. I was like, no, let me eat this, please. But now it's gone. The feeling is gone. I'm not like addicted anymore to bread or pasta or these kind of things. It's just gone. I'm not addicted to sweets. It's perfectly fine. But this change, it wasn't my brain, really. I had the feeling it was a mental battle I was fighting. And my son, he just changed his attitude and he went along until now perfectly fine. The carnivore, perfect boy. And for me, it was so hard. Let's talk about pasta. Why is it that so many people have such a hard time to just leave that crap out, because it's not that hard to just leave it out, is it? But it is.
It's not easy if you've been accustomed to that your whole life. Yeah. And like you mentioned, it's a combination of multiple factors, biological, also psychological. For example, like you said, it's part of your culture. You know, you're from Germany. Of course, you have that bread and pasta and all these things. So like, that's the first hurdle, the psychological aspect of things. Also the part of maybe you're a very social person, like how can you not eat these things when at the table there's all this bread, you look weird and awkward. So that is one of the first barriers, the psychological aspect. I'm going to be the weirdo, but you know, as Bitcoiners and homeschoolers, we're kind of used to that type of commentary. Regarding the, first of all, I think I was also addicted to bread. Like I never liked fruits. I never liked vegetables.
Yeah,
I was never into candy. But I love bread. I love sweet bread. Bread I would always have with a glass of milk in the morning and at night. So going carnivore and eliminating that wasn't the difficult. I don't know if you've seen any of my podcasts or origin story in carnivore, but the reason I got into carnivore was because of my wife. So to make that summarize that as much as possible, she had some big health problems up until one point where she just woke up one night and said, "Fernando, let's do carnivore." Slightly before that moment, I had already been researching and learning about it. So to me, it wasn't like a weird thing. I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I know a bit about it. I know I won't die. So I did it for her. And her migraines and conditions like improved dramatically. But I didn't have anything severe or anything. But I did suffer from irritable bowel syndrome since I was a child. You know, bloated, pain, constipation, sometimes diarrhea. You think it's normal. But then with carnivore, it just disappeared. Like, holy cow. Like, even though I was studying medicine at the time and reading about this and how it treated, like, the treatment, pills. You feel pain, take a pill. You have diarrhea, take a pill. So it wouldn't solve anything. It's just you're just trying to minimize the symptoms. But carnivore, it went away. We did carnivore for 3 months. And then we went on a trip in November, I remember, to Mérida, Yucatán, actually. And in a hotel, well, we didn't have our kitchen, so we broke the diet. We were eating the local food, and then December came. So it's like, you know, all the food, los tamales, buñuelos, typical Mexican treats that you have during these Christmas months, and then January as well. So we broke the diet for another 3 months, and I felt like crap. So it was the feeling like crap that I think helped me realize, oh my God, I like feeling good. I like being productive. That helped me also go back to carnivore. Because you can tell a person, you do carnivore, your diabetes will reverse. It sounds good and all, right? But to break, like, it's pleasant to eat bread because it elevates glucose, you know? And carbohydrates at the end of the day are all glucose. Your body breaks it down to glucose. And sugar affects the same areas of your brain as methamphetamines or cocaine. You know, it's an addictive substance. So when you're cutting off pastas and bread, and you've been doing that your whole life, for most people, it's like fighting an addiction, you know? It gets hard. It's hard. It's not easy. But I think what helps a lot is also you start to feel physically better. And I see in my patients, those people who have pre-existing conditions are the ones who usually tend to follow carnivore the longest or stay low carb. You don't have to stay carnivore your whole life. But they keep on doing low carb because they know how it was back then, and now it just feels so much better. So now you gain the knowledge to choose, okay, I know this will fuck me up if I eat it, but now I can choose whether it's worth it or not, like at a reunion or a party. And I think that's powerful in itself, you knowing that you have the tools to be a healthy person. So I hope I answered the question of why it's hard to leave it. It's psychological, it's biological, you know, sugar and the cravings. That stuff really does screw up with your biochemistry.
It does. And I think it makes you stupid, because I felt the weeks and months, and the change was when I started eating a keto only, the change was like from now to tomorrow. It was overnight change. My skin was clear and I had energy way more than ever before in my life. And I always thought I'm like a low energy person. No, it was the food. Holy shit. It was only the food. Now I'm looking forward to We will move again soon to another place where we will stay 5 to 6 months. And I'm already looking forward to freezing all the meat because I found a local farmer. He is sending out like raw milk, raw butter, all these raw things. And I'm like, oh my God, that is just, this is what I've been dreaming of, because on the Canary Islands, you can get a lot of chicken. Everywhere you can get chicken, but red meat is like nobody wants to sell you red meat. So here we found this farmer and he actually has red meat. It is awesome. I was like, this is, and it's all ecological, like it just tastes so different. And opening this bag when he's delivering the food and opening this bag with this raw things, it's like, wow, this is how it's supposed to be. I wish I could produce it myself. I can't. So he's delivering it for me. It's awesome. And this takes me into the direction of someone, a friend of mine, she was like, yeah, but you wanted to travel. Why do you look for a house? And I told her, dude, I need to settle down to eat correctly. That is weird, but I need a kitchen. I need a freezer. Yeah. I need these things, not for the rest of my life, but I need to take important decisions in the next couple of months. I need to organize and plan very, very important things for my future and my son's future in the next couple of weeks and months. So I have to have a clear mind, and I can only have a clear mind if I eat clean. So yeah. I need a fridge. I need a good kitchen. I need to settle down for a little bit. I need to eat healthy, and then we can go on. And I've seen the effect on my child. It was huge. He spent so much more time on his computer while eating crap. When we changed our diet, he wasn't even able to sit on that shit for too long. He had so much energy. He really wanted to explore more. So I could tell, like, the shift he made from being like more like quiet and less energy. And he's always like, kids have energy, but less energy than like a Labrador or like a golden retriever, you know. And this changed completely. And seeing now that we are getting back into shape, doing more sports again, it is a game changer. And I can say, for every homeschooling and unschooling family, I think this is the baseline of ours, or how I measure success for my child's educational journey, how healthy he is and what he chooses to eat and what not. So, and I'm so proud now that, I mean, the first time when he mentioned no pasta anymore, I was like, okay, dude, something is wrong with him, obviously. But now it makes me really proud, because now I have this awesome kid here that is eating healthy, healthier than me, healthier than anyone I know, to be honest, like, no, personally. But to be honest, the next hard thing, like really, really difficult thing, will be to avoid all the Christmas food. Oh, that is...
Yes, that is hard.
But I need to try everything, really, because I didn't come to Mexico all the way to not try the food. So I will eat my way through all the Christmas food like I eat my way through all the tacos I find.
No, and that's good. But you again, like, you have the tools. You know what you need to get back in order. So that's powerful in itself. Quick question. Was your child also vegan when you were vegan?
No, never. Never. No. Never. Oh. I would never oppose this on my kid. That is sick.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I agree. You're not giving them the right nutrients to develop properly.
Yes. He was always free to eat whatever the fuck he wants. And I was very lucky. We had like a ecological producing butcher thing right around the corner. So I was like, if you want to try meat and you know it's dead animals, just go, we can go there. And it didn't make any difference for him. I was like, this is dead animal, you know that? Like all these vegan moms do, this is a dead animal. And he was like, yeah, it's tasty. I was like, wow, this is so cruel. But I feel the same. And I just tried crocodile for the first time. And I was like, oh my God, it's so good.
Oh, really? I never tried it. Interesting.
Oh, you have to do it. I mean, it's basically chicken, wild chicken taste, somehow like that. But I think I want to collect as many different tastes of animals as possible. We tried camel 2 months ago. It was awesome. Like fresh from the desert was, that was so good.
That sounds
And I think it has an effect. You know what I really think, and maybe this is a question for you. I don't really like killing. And this is my biggest issue. I can go out and kill a snake, a crocodile, a fish. I can do that. And I can open it. I can clean it. But something with hair, like a furry animal, I cannot kill that. That is such an issue for me. And thinking about, okay, now I buy this dead cow or this chicken, and I love chicken in real life. They're awesome animals. They're so intelligent, and I can be friends with them. And we had a pet chicken. So now it's like, dude, how do you do this? Because every time I eat it, I feel like, oh my God, this could have been my friend.
Well, like, thankfully, there's a division of labor, right? Capitalism. So someone else does that for you. You just buy it.
Thank God.
I guess, again, it's a psychological thing. I think people who say they couldn't kill an animal would kill an animal if they had to. Like, you're starving out there in nature, and you had your child starving, I think you would kill an animal. I think your child or this animal, it's a psychological thing. That it's like a barrier when someone has to go through. And I'm not pro just killing for fun. No. I mean, if you're going to go out hunting, I've wanted to go hunting. I actually started archery in high school because I wanted to practice so I could go hunting one day. Awesome. But I believe that if you go hunting, it's like you will eat the animal. You will take the fur. You will. In a way, honor its death in a way by using it completely, eating the bone, like the tuétano, the fat in the bone. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love tuétano. And one of my favorite things to do before I was carnivore, my mom would get this the fat from the bone, from the bone marrow, and put it in a tortilla, the corn. Yes. Put some salt, some lemon, and then you eat it up. Oof, that was delicious. And but basically, that's how I see it. Okay, killing an animal is simply you doing what nature has designed you to do, to feast on other animals to survive. I don't know if you're religious or not.
Not at all.
Not at all, yeah. Well, I had my journey there as well. Like, you know, typical high school atheist, and then maybe around university. You're not atheist per se, but you believe that there could be a God, but you're not really sure. Mm-hmm. I forgot the word for that. And after that, I've been getting more into religion. My wife as well. She was zero religious about it. Zero pro religion. She had bad experiences with the church and stuff like that. Yes. You know, like the priests are all machista. I forgot the word.
Yeah, we can leave it in like that. I have the same opinion.
With all the brainwashing going on from the government side of things, it's like, okay, so I think it's a better idea to have, like, humans have this spiritual need, this spiritual void that must be filled with something.
True.
Even those who consider themselves atheists, in my opinion, there is no real atheist, because you'll believe in something else. You'll believe in the state. You'll believe in the science. TM, right? So we'd rather fill that void that's human with something that's been going on for thousands of years, something that teaches you values and stuff like that. If they don't want to do that later on when they're adults, okay, but we want to protect them as much as we can from filling in that void from, like, things that come from the state, you know. Yes. Not even knowing your gender. That's how we view it.
Nice. I like that idea. I mean, I do believe in God, and I try to have a good connection to whatever is happening up there, down there, wherever this is, whatever it is. But, like, organized religion gives me the creep somehow, because I always think, like, dude, who are you? You're standing between me and God. I don't know who put you there. I didn't do it. So I don't know if I need you. But anyway, it is what it is. But that is quite interesting, because I studied religious studies. So I've been visiting so many different religious cults and directions, tried out really anything that came up. I still do it. If a stranger on the street is asking me, oh, you want to see the church? Yeah, I want to see your church, this church. I want to hear how you pray. I want to know everything. I love it. It's my favorite thing to do. We spent some time in Portugal, and there was like a lady, and she was like inviting us to her church. And I was like, yes, that is gonna be awesome. Let's follow a stranger into her church. And it was really awesome, because it always reminds me of, I love how people love God, but I don't need anyone to teach me how to love God, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So not doing it. Yeah, how do you cope with being so different from everyone else? I mean, you're not eating normally, you're not teaching your kids, like educating them in the normal way, you're not doing your finances in the normal way. I mean, I think you're getting used to it the longer you live the normal, like for me, normal lifestyle. Let's call it the Bitcoin lifestyle. Because I think fiat lifestyle is just dying out, maybe. I hope so, at least, because I don't see any future for it. But how are you coping with it? Because for me, my family hates me for living how I live. And of course, my friends love it. But it has been a really, really rough journey to come to a point where I can say, dude, I give no shit about your opinion because I see the results in my family and this is what counts. How do you do it? And at what point are you in this?
Yeah, so, okay, so people know I'm just 30 years old. So fairly young, you could say. At least that's the comment I get amongst the medical community, you know. So I'm not where I want to be yet regarding homeschooling financially and all these type of things. I'm building towards it, but on my way. So at the moment, it's lonely because we think completely different. And it's not like we have the social or economic capital to deploy right now to have the community we want. That is changing. Like, my wealth has been increasing ever since I got into Bitcoin. I'm not there where I want to be yet, but what we decided to do is, well, our community is online right now. My podcast that I do have allowed me to meet a lot of people. That is fantastic. Networking to me is one of the most important things that one should learn to do. We're social animals. So it's building up the social capital online. So by the time when we have the money, let's say, to travel, which actually it's, I would say next year is going to be the year if we kick it in place. We want to start going to these places. We want to get to know what you're doing, basically. We want to find a place where we can find our people, our community. Yes. Right now we have Paraguay in mind, freedom oriented. I am a lot of having a plan B, plan C, you know, passport or residency. I want to accumulate passports and residencies.
Yes,
I
think that's me too.
Yes, yes. You should get Mexico. It's
oh,
a good
yes,
one. Yes,
I'm on it. I'm on it.
Yes. And so the way I deal with it, the loneliness, is it's online, basically. And well, my work doesn't allow me to have too much free time anyways. But I cope with it by being with people I want online and forming those communities. As for my children and my wife, that's hard. There is a large homeschooling community anywhere in the city where I live. The pandemic kind of kicked that off. So that helps a lot. My wife's a bit more reserved person. So I'm the one who kind of has to like push her to like go out. You know what I mean? And she's pregnant right now. So that's I can't really be forcing her to do that right now. And she also has a lupus. So that's one of the things that helped push her into carnivore.
Nice.
And it got so much better because of it. But right now she's having some flares. And for her, it's been hard to stay carnivore or ketovore, but she's realized that a lot of foods don't go well with her. And that to her is depressing. It really makes her feel bad. She can't have dairy when back then she would have dairy. She can't have pastas and stuff like she used to because it just triggers it. Are you going to upload this to YouTube or is it like a non-censorable stuff? Like Noster?
Yeah.
We think that the vaccines were the things that triggered her lupus at the end of the day because she was perfectly healthy until that moment.
Until
she took the vaccines. Because it happened out of nowhere. And there's no family history, no nothing. But anyways, moving on. I have to be the one, I think I sometimes I'm the one who has to kind of help my children socialize in the way that I would like them to not feel lonely. You know what I mean? Because I don't know how it is in Germany or other places, but in Germany it's illegal, but the homeschooling children kind of look like the weirdos. No, I remember in my school, like, oh, that guy was homeschooled. He's weird, you know? And that's kind of in general, that's how it is in Mexico as well. But I still haven't found that community that we want. We've been finding other communities, but we just don't have that other mindset like Bitcoin or other things. So we just don't connect very well so far. Yeah. Sorry for the long
answer. No. That is awesome. Yeah, I think we're still very, very early. And what I found out that some people are into eating healthy, some are into Bitcoin, some are into homeschooling, but I don't find too many families that really combine all these topics and go crazy on all these topics. So finding other families that are as crazy as our family, I love it. Then I just want them to adopt me. I want to move in their spare room and never want to leave again.
Yeah, me too.
It is fantastic if you meet them. But what I found out also is, like, if you meet these kind of families, even if it's just for a couple of days, it gives you so much energy for the next couple of months. And this is what I try to do through world schooling, like meeting all these beautiful families along the way. And it is what it is. We are still trying to look for our tribe, so to say, as well.
Yeah.
And I really need to say the only real tribe I found was in Thailand in the middle of the jungle. And it has been like maybe 11 years ago.
Well,
and these people, I mean, they didn't know about Bitcoin, to be honest, you know, but they had this Bitcoin mindset and they were eating healthy and they were just different to each other. They were very different with their kids and everything made sense to me. And they welcomed us like we were born there. They cared for my child like it was their child. And they knew we would leave someday and they still put all this energy in us. So I thought, like, I want to have this feeling back of being part of a community so much that people don't even care. Like, you're a gringo, doesn't matter, or anything like that. And let's see, because I think more and more families are like us and they look for something like this. So I think we will be lucky maybe one day.
Yeah, there has to be. Thanks to the internet, communications out there, and well, it's just a matter of time before we start finding each other and saying, okay, this is community here, come and visit us, join, buy a house, buy some land around here. That's what I want. My dream is to buy a big plot of land where I can build whatever I want, but nearby having a regenerative rancher, you know.
Yes.
All these type of things that I think will make a community strong. I have a question for you.
Yes.
So, how many countries have you visited as a homeschooler? Yeah,
I don't know, to be honest. Maybe 30 or something like that.
Wow.
So we really traveled a lot since my son was born. I was still studying when he was born. And in Germany, you have like 3 months of university, 3 months of break, and 3 months of university. So in these breaks, I was like, who's gonna stop me? Oh. So I was really trying out a lot and we never stopped. Like when I finished university, I packed my bags and adios amigos. So we really never stopped traveling. We found some kind of places where we stayed for a couple of months longer. The longest we stayed was on the Canary Islands, but because of the lockdowns, and then we fell in love with the place and I found like, okay, we can learn Spanish here and then we can move to like more interesting countries. But I wasn't brave enough in this state to move to South America or somewhere because I was like, dude, I don't speak Spanish well enough. My child is super young. I have no clue how life works. So I was like, oh, Canary Islands is a good place to learn for life. So yeah, we did that. But to be honest, all this world schooling experience is really, really great, but I can only do this because I have no family, you know? Just imagine I would have a family, like a husband, more kids, grandma, grandpa, and these kind of things. I wouldn't travel, I guess. I would stay home, get fat, and be happy. That is what it is, I need to be honest. But having like this lack of family makes me, yeah, just go around and see places. And yeah, so my family doesn't really travel, but my family is divided into mother's side, like not traveling at all, my dad's side, all over the place, all over the world, everywhere is like home and anyone is everywhere. And it's just crazy. You meet people like, what? I'm related to you. Why are you here? Like I'm at the end of the world. And this is quite nice to see because maybe it's genetics as well. But yeah, no, I really think traveling is the best thing you can do for your kids. And your kids probably speak Spanish, English, and this is what they need. to travel, basically. So that is easy. That is
exactly what we want to do. We want them to experience the world. I managed to do this when I was younger. I've been to Europe multiple times, Germany, Romania, Italy, even China.
Nice.
And it really helps open your eyes. So I want to give that to my children as well, but perhaps even better than I experienced. I want them to actually experience the culture for some time.
Yeah.
And working remotely, my job is remote right now. I think that gives you so much more freedom. And Bitcoin gives you the financial freedom to do things. You know, not worrying about your bank account being frozen or whatnot. You can go to any country and you can exchange Bitcoin for the local fiat currency, most likely. I think anywhere in the world almost. So that's another huge pro for people with this type of mentality, in my opinion. Yeah. So I think we should take that advantage. Now, I also have another question. What's your take on Europe in general? Regarding freedom going forward. Mm. The way I see it, and my wife sees it, it looks like Europe is going downhill. We wouldn't think living there, would you?
No, not at all. I mean, I left Germany 2017 because I didn't want my kid to get in the school system and this crazy thing what is happening over there. And I've been traveling since 2013. I've been traveling all over Europe with my kid because I really wanted to stay in Europe for my grandma and my grandpa, because I promised them to not leave Europe until they died. One of them is still alive, but I couldn't wait any longer, so now I'm in Mexico. But I really try to be only like a couple of months in Asia or somewhere else. So I really tried every damn country in Europe, and I never felt like free or relaxed or one with nature or these kind of things that I'm looking for. This is not for me. This is too much metrics. It's too many people. It's too much infrastructure for everything. Like, what the fuck? Who needs so much infrastructure? I don't get it. In Portugal, we spent a couple of months in Portugal, and they have so many streets. It's such a small country. Why you have so many streets? I don't get it. It was such an overkill for me. So I decided, as a German, left Germany a long time ago, I don't see anything happening over there. It is just going downhill. Everyone is hating each other. Too many migrants coming from countries that are not culturally fitting or adapting. Mm-hmm. I also studied Islamic science for 10 years. I'm speaking Arabic. I'm really in love with this culture. So I really see it with a divided heart, like seeing all these Muslim people coming there, having this beautiful cultural background, but just the most stupid coming to my country. Why? Yep. And I'm so sorry to say it like that. Call me a right-wing asshole. That's okay for me. But seeing like it, and the Germans do it as well. They export their really the most stupid Germans to Spain. So there's a region in Spain where the stupid Germans live. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So everyone is, I think every country is doing it like that. But I see it really, it is on purpose. And the countries are crumbling and nobody's really doing anything about it. So why staying there? And I really see like Middle and South America, they have similar problems, because people here tell me, yeah, the people from Venezuela, they're like, no, I don't want this again. I don't need Venezuelan people now. Like the whole story is repeating itself on the other side of the globe. And now the Venezuelans are the bad guys infiltrating every country with their crazy ideas and mindset. But I've seen this on the Canary Islands. They have such a mixed culture of South America and Spain. So I got to know the Venezuelans. I got to know the Argentinian people. So I got a feeling for where I wanted to live, how the people were vibing. And I was like, dude, Mexican people were like the best. They were like normal human beings. That was awesome. So what I see in Mexico and also South America, this is going better than Europe, but way better.
Yeah, that, that,
I don't know what's your take on Mexico. Please tell me something good about the country.
Yeah, no, of course. I've been looking a lot into this flag theory, you know. So that's why I've taken into consideration Europe. You know, my wife's Latvian, my children are Latvian, so like it could be easy for me in theory to get residency there and eventually citizenship. But like seeing where it's going, I'm like, no, thank you. So like, where do I go? Asia, I think is like too far away and too culturally different. And you can get a residency, but you can never really become a citizen of that country. But South America, Central America, first of all, we have this, I forgot what the term is, but if you're born in almost every country, any country here in this part of the world, you're a citizen, and you can also easily apply for residency and stuff like that. So about Mexico, yes, the Venezuela thing is a problem. I do think it's all politically motivated. Mm-hmm. You know, there's rumors about the United States wanting to invade or destabilize Venezuela more than it already is, right? And that would trigger a massive migration crisis. Obviously, that would go through Mexico. All these people want to go to the United States. Mexico is obviously there in the crosshairs, or it's the bridge, basically. But regarding Mexico politically, it's right now there's a left-leaning president.
Yeah.
It's Claudia Sheinbaum.
Yeah.
Before her was AMLO, known as Andrés Manuel López Obrador. I know Spanish people have the longest names. but very left-leaning. And they've been adopting a lot of these welfare policies and stuff like that. So if you tell me how Mexico is going politically, I would say downhill as well. But the difference is that it's a very incompetent government. Right? It's a relatively big country.
Oh, it's like huge.
It's a huge country, and it's poor.
Yeah.
So the massive surveillance, because Mexican government has utilized Pegasus, like the super spyware. Mm. They have done that. They do use it. They're one of the main users of it. But it's for targeted individuals because they don't have the money to be like United States or in a lot of European countries, like massive surveillance everywhere. They're trying to do that. Like here in my city, they're trying to put cameras up everywhere. Mérida, Yucatán, and they have cameras everywhere as well.
They have so many.
They have, but they don't work all the time. So my wife had a little car crash once over here when she was pregnant. The police officer came, and a person who crashed, like, she got crashed, the car hit her, and the car left. And there were cameras, and they checked them, and the officer said, okay, one camera doesn't work, and the other one, you can't really see anything. It's like typical Mexico, you know? So what I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of incompetence in Mexico. So if you know how to move around, I think it's a lot easier to make a parallel economy in Mexico because of it. You can live without the state. You can find a sly roundabout way to go around them and live a pretty free life.
Yeah.
Nice. The problem is if you're the typical Mexican, like 60% of the Mexican population earns less than $700 a month. So they're kind of stuck in the welfare state. They're stuck in this and that. For them, it's not good. But for those who have capital, especially if you earn in dollars or euros and live in Mexico, you can do a lot with it. And you can live, in my opinion, a very good life. And I think foreigners are left alone much more, in any country, are left alone more than the local population, because you're just that gringo or that German. They'll leave you alone. If you're not getting into politics or stuff like that, you'll be most likely left alone. But I think in that regard, Mexico is fantastic for an expat. Like, it's a lot of freedom and things if you know how to do it. But me personally, since I'm already Mexican, I want South America. I want a residency down there. And like I said, Paraguay, Argentina, Uruguay. I know Uruguay homeschooling is a no-no. But that means Uruguay or Argentina is what I'm looking into right now.
That's nice. You know, you really confirmed what I felt about the Mexicans here, and that if you're smart enough, you can work around every law, basically. And if you're white, that is, in these kind of things, it's a good thing, because I wanted to buy like a little motor, a scooter. And I don't have residency, I don't have address, nothing. And the dude was like, yeah, just give me 20 pesos mass and I'm going to do it. And I was like, oh, that is beautiful. I love it.
And cash, very cash society. I think in a lot of countries, they want to make everything cashless.
Yes.
That's an invasion on privacy. But Mexico, it's still very cash heavy.
They love cash and I love it, really. I just love the vibe of the people, because what I encountered here was... And Germany has this attitude. It's impossible, so it's impossible. It's not, it's forbidden, so it's forbidden. But here the people are like, let's see how we do it. And this is what I really love. And this is how I want to raise my kid, not in this mindset of, oh, someone said no, but in this mindset of whatever you want to do, you can find a way. And this being left alone as a gringo, I feel that a lot. Like, they let us homeschool here because we're white and nobody cares. And like, yeah, it's foreigners. Who cares about them? And yeah, who cares about me? I should be left alone. I love it. And this is where I love it here. Yeah, so I'm now gathering the strength here to move to a even crazier country. For me as a German, this is already like a lot of chaos around me. I love it. I'm getting used to it. But step by step. Because what I really think is, if the more countries you can like, put off your travel list, the more experienced you are. And so the next country won't be that crazy anymore. You know what my really, maybe I won't do it until my son moved out, but I really want to explore Brazil. But the language, holy shit, it's impossible. I can't really do it.
Why? You know Spanish, it should be relatively easy to learn it Portuguese.
It should be so easy. I do understand most of it, but just imagine I have to speak to people over there. I couldn't. So I was like, dude, I know Spanish. I can travel to literally any other country on this continent. So let's do it. And now that I made the first step, more and more of my friends are like, oh, I'm coming with you. Or, oh, really? You know where I'm moving to, Costa Rica. And I'm like, wow. Dude, yes, please move all here so I can travel to each country to visit my friends and to build communities along the way. That is really beautiful.
So, oh, truly. Oh, if you come to the north of Mexico, the north is known for its beef.
Yes.
We love carne asada. It's very common for like every weekend Mexican friends and family to get together and fry their steaks on the grill, have nopales and stuff alike. If you do ever come up here, let me know. We'll show you around the state. We have Barrancas del Cobre, which is basically a canyon larger than the Grand Canyon in the United States. We have El Desierto de Samalayuca, but you've already been to the desert. But Samalayuca is basically a desert like the Sahara. You know, it's all sandy and whatnot. Yeah. You can go surfing, sand surfing, yes, stuff like that. There's a lot more distance between places and cities in the north. Central Mexico is more like Europe. There's like cities every 30 minutes you drive out. It's more crowded. I never liked crowded places that much. I guess this freedom. But hopefully you get to know Mexico. It's a big country. There's a lot to see, and I hope you like it.
Yeah, it is really incredible. Thank you so much. If you ever come to the peninsula here, let's explore chicken country. No, but I know a place where you can eat beef, at least one place I found. No, seriously. So what is your like vision for the next couple of years for like everything, like how we live this Bitcoin lifestyle community? Because what I see is really a lot of people are on the way to somewhere else, looking for different options, building something. So what I see is more and more unschooling, homeschooling Bitcoiners getting closer together in the same country, even maybe sometimes living in the same country. That's unbelievable. And leaving Europe, I see more and more people just being like, okay, adios amigos, I cannot take it anymore over there. So I see South and Middle America as the new hubs where you should be to be in the new kind of, I don't like to call it new world because it sounds so stupid, but what else can I call it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. What is your vision?
My vision, it depends how far out, but in the next few years, I do plan, like I mentioned earlier, I want to get to know people online and then know where these communities are located or make my own communities. I mean, that's the cool thing. You can make your... Just do it. If it doesn't exist, just build it. You know, just do it. And I think Nostr is one of those things that enables this.
Oh, so much, yes.
Yes, I love it. So I haven't been active in a long time, but I plan on getting back. And like you mentioned, South America, Central America, they're obviously not these rich, wealthy countries like, you know, like how Europe used to be. It's still wealthy, but it's riding on the wealth that had accumulated in the past. It's parasiting off of that wealth. But it's going downhill, in my opinion. But you go, but even though, like in South America or Central America, they're poorer countries. In my opinion, they're going up, you know. And again, I mentioned the great three in South America for me, like Uruguay, Paraguay, Argentina. I think they're starting to get their shit together. Paraguay for a long time has been very, you could say, right leaning. Mm-hmm. Taxes are great. That's why I have my eyes on it. Mm-hmm. So where do I see myself? I see myself in Paraguay, eating great beef. Because there's great beef in Argentina and Uruguay as well. Having my own land and being with like-minded people. I don't know how long that will take. But one of the things I also want to do is I want to start getting into really, really deep into the Austrian economics rabbit hole. I like teaching. I've realized that with the carnivore stuff. But I also want to teach about economics because I think in the Spanish-speaking world, mm-hmm. there's a huge lack of it. Huge. Just like with carnivore, there's like almost no one talking about carnivore. The same thing with Austrian economics. So I want to build that. I think I want to build the community. I want people, like the way I opened my eyes out of nowhere, I think people can just hear about it, listen about it. They're like, oh my God, that does make sense. Because I literally changed from socialist, you know, who doesn't know he's a socialist, but he's a socialist, to like libertarian in just a few days by reading that book. I think there's a lot of people who are just mindlessly walking and thinking and believing things. But if they just had that moment of like eye-opening moment, like they could switch, it could come over to our side. And I think that's a beautiful part. So that's what I also want to do in the future. I want to start building more Austrian economic content in Spanish.
Nice.
Yeah.
Makes sense, really. Because the people I meet, I mean, they're super intelligent, most of the people I talk to here. Although some of them never went to school and they're so intelligent.
Yeah.
And giving them the tools in Spanish, I think that would be huge.
Oh, there's a lot of potential.
Huge. Yes, so much potential. And because I think that the average Mexican I'm meeting is quite intelligent. And the people in Germany, they think of themselves like they're so intelligent, but they're closed-minded. The big difference here is people are really open-minded. So there is hope. I support what you're planning. I love it.
Thank you. Really, really nice. You have another advantage. In Mexico, you're in the southern part and you're saying you're around the touristic areas. So there's a lot of expats there. But the real locals in southern Mexico, I always say Mexico should be at least three different countries, north, center, and south. Because we're so different. So down there, you have los Yucatecos they're basically the descendants of the Mayans.
Yes.
So short people. Yeah. That's them. They're usually more reserved people. They kind of keep the foreigners and expats out, but they're very friendly. I think you would identify a lot with, central, especially the northern Mexico, where it's mainly settlers from Spain and stuff like that. So there's more of a wider population. And we're more related to the Americans, I guess, like culture-wise than the rest of Mexico. But a common thing in all of Mexico, and I think it's a consequence of the Spanish conquista, you know, there's a lot of classicism.
Yes,
that's and so like if your skin tone is more towards the white, you're usually seen as a more smarter or even respectable person than someone who's more darker skinned. So I think that's also a thing that expats, like if the expat, la gringo, la alemana, the German, is giving a financial advice or like how to homeschool, I feel that a lot of Mexicans will like take your word more seriously than another Mexican. Because he's a Mexican. Like there's a common saying in Mexico as well, el peor enemigo de un Mexicano es otro Mexicano. Like the worst enemy of a Mexican is another Mexican. That's like, it's really sad in a way, society speaking. But I think you could help educate people just because of your skin tone. You simply sound more intelligent to them. But anyways, I just brought that up because I think that's something that Bitcoiners could use to their advantage to create the communities in Mexico. If the smart gringo is doing this and he has clearly money because he's a Bitcoiner, you know, then maybe we should do what he's doing or listen to him at least.
I would love that. Yeah. In my mind, I was thinking about contenido en español. And then I was thinking, this is maybe something my son could do because he is so much cuter than me and he has no prior. Like project he would need to merge it into. So I was thinking like maybe this is something for him. Maybe me and him together, because he's into Bitcoin, he's into homeschooling and schooling. Maybe we should start a Spanish podcast and invite Spanish speaking people and these kind of things. And just
you could try getting in contact with Bull Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So I'm a missionary in Bull mm-hmm. Bitcoin. And if you want to do Bitcoin promotional content, especially locally, they're willing to fund it.
Oh, really?
Yes. So I think that would be amazing. Yeah. I can send you the link so you can look and see. You can apply, basically. So if you show them your YouTube, your podcast and everything, I'm pretty sure you'll get accepted as a missionary. So they opened up in Mexico earlier this year. So here in Mexico, you can use Bull Bitcoin to easily get pesos into your bank account and buy Bitcoin and all that stuff. So it's really cool. And there's like a Telegram group and everything, so you can organize and talk with people.
That's
so maybe your son could like get some help from Bull Bitcoin to promote Bitcoin in Mexico.
Yes. Let's do it. I love it. Because I always had the idea of creating Bitcoin Canarias, because I thought like the Canary Islands need Bitcoin. Then I understood people don't give a shit. Most of the Canary Island people are quite basic in their lifestyle and the way what they want from life. And I see Mexicans are like so open-minded. Awesome. Nice. Thank you so, so much for sharing all of these insights from your family and everything with me and with the listeners, of course, too. So yes. If someone wants to stay up to date on what you're doing, I mean, you are on Nostr, but at the moment not so active, where can people find you?
I'm actually not very active. And for the last few months, I've been doing some extra life projects, but you can find me on Nostr. I'm much more active there when I am active. But you can also find me on YouTube as Dr. Fernando Morales. I have all my carnivore content there. I have a few Bitcoin episodes, Bull Bitcoin ones and stuff the like. I try to touch Austrian economics a bit in my videos, get the people curious about it. And that's basically it. I'm not really social media. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, but I never use it. Don't send me a message there. If you want to message me through, I guess, Nostr, you know. Not the DMs, though, because they don't work. There's a lot of scammers in there. So just tag me in the post, and I'm pretty sure that's how you and I got that's in contact. Actually. Yeah, through Nostr. And one last thing I should mention, this is a homeschooling podcast, right? For those interested in homeschooling in Mexico, if there's still time, I can give a quick summary of what it looks like.
Yes, okay. Please.
So obviously I looked into this because can you homeschool in Mexico? Question is, yes, you can, but it's a gray zone. It's neither legal nor illegal, but there's a lot of freedom. Like we talked about earlier, you can do a lot of things without any problem. And if you have from the moment the child is born up to 10 years old, you do whatever you want. You can teach them whatever you want. And at 10 years old, if you want, they can apply to an exam to revalidate their elementary school. So it's basically but they have to be 10. They can be older, but they have to be at least 10 years old. So once they're at least 10 years old, they can apply for this exam. It's like modules. It would take around 6 to 12 months to complete, depending on how fast and good you are. But you don't even have to go to classes. They give you the material, and you just go and present your classes. And it's actually an institution. If you guys are interested, it's called INEA, I-N-E-A. You can look them up on the website to see where's your nearest plaza comunitaria or community center to go and apply for the exams. You have to go there in person to apply. And it's designed for adults who, you know, in Mexico, it's a poor country. A lot of adults do not have basic education. So it was with them in mind, but homeschoolers have exploited it, you know, to I homeschool. They do these tests and elementary school. Fantastic. And then middle school, right? But you have to be at least 15 years old to apply for the middle school exam, revalidation exam. So from 10 to 15, you're kind of like in this limbo, you know, because if you want to put your child into school, you only have this elementary certificate. So if you did it. So, you know, if he's like 13 or 14 years old, you'd have to start high school middle school from the very beginning. So you kind of have to calculate that. But once he's 15, he can revalidate his or her middle school. Again, it's it can be just an exam, or you can do it with through modules, which takes more time. And then once the child is 18, or the man or woman is 18, they can once again apply to Prepa Abierta or Ceneval. Those two options. Prepa Abierta, again, you just, it's like, again, be 1 to 3 years, depending on how long, how intensely you study, but there's no classes. They give you the material, you buy it, you study, and you just go and present exams. It's like 22 modules. Each exam costs like 100 pesos, which is like €5, yeah, $5. Amazing. Exactly. Or you can do a one-time exam, just one day. It's like 8 hours, though, but it's like one day. It's like 3,500 pesos. 150 euros, I guess you could say. You take it one time. If you pass, you got your high school certificate right away.
Crazy.
So this is obviously perhaps for people who are interested in or want to give their children the option to study in a university later on. I don't really think, I don't believe you need university to be successful in life. But we do it either way, because you never know. Maybe the child wants to be a doctor or a lawyer. And for that, well, you need to go to university. So we want to keep the options open for them. And that's why we plan on doing it. But there's the option if you want to homeschool in Mexico. Again, if you never, in theory, it's a child is supposed to receive an education legally. But since there's a lot of poverty in there, there's just these ways to go around it. And homeschoolers can take advantage of that.
Oh, yes.
So that's the gist of it.
Nice. That is cool. Thank you so much. I didn't know that with these exams. I will tell my kid. Maybe he's interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if the child, another technique or another thing other people employ is they get these, there's these shell schools in the United States. So it's like legally on paper, it's a school, but there's no physical classroom or anything. But you pay and you get like this curriculum, or they send you report cards. So if you come to Mexico with a report card from one of these shell schools, it's like you just have to revalidate like the years, like first, second, third, fourth grade. And it's perhaps a more, for those who are very nervous about like, oh no, I want my child to have like every year of school has to be revalidated. You can do that, revalidate in Mexico, and you're good to go.
That's awesome. Mexico is a wonderful place. Really?
Enjoy.
Nice. Really, thank you so much. That was really, really, really nice to talk to you. I learned tons and I enjoyed our talk a lot.
Enjoyed it likewise. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Nice. Awesome.
Thank you so much for listening. Oh, meine Fresse. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to support my work, please head over to Fountain or Linktree. I do accept Bitcoin, and it means the world to me if you guys support my work. And leave a comment, reach out to me on Nostr. I'm really happy to hear from you. Thank you so much. And if you want to have more of Wildlife Unschooling, head over to Fountain. There's a Wildlife Unschooling Premium. It starts with $5 a month, and you can pay more if you want, and you can pay in Bitcoin. There you will find all bonus episodes, and you will have early access to all my scheduled episodes. Have fun, and see you soon.